live on history.fm and liveparanormalradio.com. This is Exploring Mysteries, Histories, and the Paranormal with Dr. John. This is John DeSalvo, your guide for the next 60 minutes, and I want to thank you for being with us tonight. Is there a cave in southern Illinois that contains thousands of artifacts from this ancient culture that were placed there by these early explorers? We'll find out about this cave named Burroughs Cave directly from our special guest, Russell Burroughs, who was the discoverer of this cave in 1982. Russ is also a ghost hunter and will tell us about his fascinating experiences in this area. Russell Burroughs was born in 1935 in West Virginia. He served in the armed forces and also had a career as a certified correctional officer. As a hobby, he searched for artifacts and explored caves. Russ participates in Civil War reenactments and is the author of the book, The Mystery Cave of Many Faces, which tells of the history and discovery of Burroughs Cave. I'd like to just read this first paragraph from the jacket of Russ's book and then bring Russ on. In April 1982, a carver named Russell Burroughs discovered an astounding cave in a remote valley in southern Illinois. The cave's walled-up entrance and its passages are buried in about 9 feet of silt, but in his explorations, Burroughs had found quantities of objects that cannot belong here, according to conventional historians. In the course of his slitherings through the silt, Burroughs had come upon thousands of engraved stones bearing non-American art styles and inscriptions in ancient European and Asian scripts. He has found regal burial crypts, metal weapons, ceramics, cloth, and statuaries. An amazing, amazing find. Well, anyways, my pleasure to introduce my good friend, Russell Burroughs, to the program. Hello, Russ. Welcome to the program.
Hi, John. Thank you.
Hey, listen, it's a real pleasure having you be a guest on my show. You know, I've known you for years, and I've been always so fascinated in Burroughs Cave and your discovery. You know, maybe the best way to start, because I'm sure a lot of listeners may never have heard of Burroughs Cave, if you want to maybe give us a kind of a brief summary of how you discovered it, maybe, you know, what was what you found inside?
Oh, sure. When I found it, I wasn't searching for a cave. I was searching for an old homestead. Planned on doing some metal detecting, you know, might find an ox shoe or something like that. And I fell into a hole. And luckily for my metal detector, which is a good one, good strong stem, it caught me on both sides, and I was able to get back up. Because that hole was about 12 feet deep, and it was man-made, and was milk bottle shaped, and it was located on a pathway, if you can call it that, around a cliff, and it was designed, I believe, to trap anyone who was getting too close to where this cave was located. But that is not the cave. It took me another 5 days or so to actually locate the cave, because I knew there was something there because of what was in that hole. There was a very large face carved into the wall, and I knew something else was there, so I forgot about the homestead and started looking for that. And I found it. And it was actually stoned up with cut and fitted blocks of stone with a keystone in the center, which once you had set all the stones in place and you put the keystone in and drove it in, that tightened everything up. I was able to get into the thing with a length or a strap of stainless steel, which I was able to slip into the side of it and push the locking pin out, which set into a groove into the back of the keystone. Once I did that, removed the keystone, everything fell apart. So that's how I found it.
And you could have really gotten trapped if you were in quick and had your metal detector, because that would have just closed, that trap door would have just closed in on you.
I would have been an artifact myself.
And you wouldn't have been on the program tonight.
No.
Wow. So now you're in the cave, and what was the first thing you started to explore?
Well, the entrance was interesting. You go into the thing, you go in on a kind of a ledge, and then there's a drop down a couple, 3 feet, which is the floor of the cave, or up to that point in height anyway. So being a caver, once I got in there, I went back home, got my lights and such, and came back. And I found that the cave was full of a my dinner's coming back on me. I found that the cave was filled with a sandy, very fine sandy silt, which measures in different places 8 to 12 feet in depth. And I determined that by screwing shotgun rods together and sticking them down until I hit the floor. But I found right away, I started finding these stone tablets, and I just found it anywhere I scooped the silt, there they were. I mean, by the hundreds or thousands.
And what size were they approximately?
Oh, they were running anywhere from palm size up to 2 feet or so.
And what was on them?
Scripting, writing in script. Some of them, of course, had images carved into them. But the majority of them, I believe, were just scripted, like an ancient book.
Wow, you know, and for listeners too, if they want to see some samples of these artifacts, they go to the radio website, drjohnradio.com, under Russ's name. We posted some of these artifacts. So you must have been totally amazed first that you're in this cave that you had no idea was there, and all of a sudden there's these hundreds or maybe thousands of artifacts that are just sitting there in the silt and all over the cave.
Yeah, I was. I wasn't really amazed. I knew that it was something special. I was more mystified because as I looked at these things, I realized that they were not Native American. And so I was more mystified than anything.
Now, there were portraits, too. I mean, when you looked at these and looked at the pictures of the people and the languages, what did you have any idea what culture you thought they may have come from?
No, had no idea.
Wow. Now, how long were you in the cave? How long did you explore this first time? And did you take anything with you when you left?
The first time I actually got into the cave was about April the 12th of 1082. And the first time I went in, I took some small pieces because I wanted to look at them, try to figure out what they were. Then later on, as other people got interested, I began taking things out.
When you took these first pieces out, who did you first show them to, and what were the responses from these individuals?
Well, that's an interesting story. I took them up to Eastern Illinois University at Charleston and met with an archaeologist there by the name of Brown. And he looked at them and said he had no idea what they were, but they were interesting. But he said he knew someone who would know. And I said, okay, fine, here's my phone number. Call me when you get it figured out. Well, he called that afternoon and said he had an answer. And he said these were made by a cult back about 1880 over around Salem, Illinois, and they were buried and hidden in caves, et cetera, et cetera. And I asked him where he got this information, and he said from Susan Mogerman, who was the state archaeologist at that time. And then he said, now that we know there's no value to this, why don't you tell me where it is? Right away, I knew what was going on. I mean, I didn't just fall off of a turnip truck, you know.
Oh, sure. Wow, that's, you know, I was going to say that they must have been overwhelmed with this, realizing this didn't fit in their natural, their understanding of normal history.
That's correct. That's right.
So what did you do after you realized you getting a runaround from these people and they just wanted you to reveal where your treasure was?
Well, I contacted a couple of other people and didn't get much from them. Because they said they have no idea. They've never seen anything like it. And it continued like that up till about 1987 when, by invitation, I attended the ISAAC conference. That's the ancient study for ancient American cultures. That's in Columbus, Georgia. And there I met a gentleman by the name of Cyclone Covey. Now, it turns out Cyclone Covey is one of those high-powered scholars. He's an ancient historian, and, of course, he's professor emeritus now from Wake Forest University.
Mm.
And he let me know in no uncertain terms that this was from cultures in Africa. And I said, how in the hell did they get here? And he said, well, they had Phoenicians and they had Carthaginians who had sailing ships. And he figures they brought them with them, some of them anyway. I'm sure some were locally made, you know, but no proof of that. No proof, really, that they came from Africa.
Hmm. Now, I know, too, a lot of the traditional academics, they basically don't accept the idea that there were pre-Columbian visits, so they probably disregard this whole theory.
Well, some of them said I'm the biggest crook that ever lived and I'm the greatest forger who ever lived. Well, that's kind of interesting. Forger? What did I, or was I supposed to have forged? I mean, no one had ever seen anything like this before. What was I supposed to have forged? You know, a forgery is a copy of something.
Sure, you know, maybe I should just mention, we're not talking about a couple dozen artifacts, but
no,
we're talking about 7,000 or so.
Somewhere, I'm not certain anymore, somewhere between 7 and 9,000.
Wow. And, you know, I have to say, too, I've, looking at the pictures is one thing, but I've handled hundreds and hundreds of these artifacts and spent hours and hours with them. I actually have a small collection. And, I'm not an archaeologist. I'm no expert. But in my humble opinion, there is no way any one person or group of people could have put these together. The diversity and the portraits and the symbols and the languages, it's just totally amazing. Also, didn't you have a professor emeritus from University of Wisconsin? It was Dr. Jim Scherers. Didn't he look at them? He was an engineering professor, and I think he felt they were authentic, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Jim is a civil and environmental engineer, professor emeritus there now, and he's been a supporter since I met him in 1991 or 92. One heck of a good guy. And very, very knowledgeable. He's done surveys and studies of effigy mounds in Wisconsin. It's absolutely unbelievable. Matter of fact, you get in touch with him, have him send you his new book.
Yeah, Jim is an amazing. I had lunch with Jim a while ago, and we sat discussing Burroughs Cave, and I asked him outright. I said, do you believe these artifacts are authentic? And he said, yes, he did. And again, Jim has an impressive academic credentials, which is really unusual for academics to, you know, break the standard accepted theory. And so I have to give him credit. I guess, too, he's a professor emeritus. Being retired, you don't risk your tenure or your job. But I guess I kind of jumped ahead. I guess after that first visit to Burroughs Cave, I guess, did you subsequently go back? And, you know, how many visits did you make over what kind of period?
Oh, gosh, John, I don't know for sure. I was there virtually every night. I always went at night because I didn't want to get followed. Plus, it's always dark in a cave anyway. So I don't know, from mid-April of 1982 until the middle of July of 1987. Well, that's when the new antiquities law came into effect. And at that time, had to seal the cave up, you know, and not go back in because it was a state and federal violation because I had found human remains in there.
Oh, and, could you tell us about that?
Well, yeah, the remains, I did find a few pieces, an ankle joint and part of a tibia out in the main corridor. But these burials, there are 13 burial crypts in that cave. I looked in three of them. That's counting one on the lower level, and the rest are still sealed. Because I knew what they were going to contain, you know, and why disturb it? So
were they stone coffins that you found?
The one on the lower level was a stone sarcophagus with a casket inside of it. But the ones up on top, up in the upper level, the body had just been laying on a stone bier.
Was there any decorations on the coffins or on the walls of this a ritual burial area to give you any idea of, you know, the culture where they may have come from? Were they European, Asian, you know, Native American looking, African?
Well, the one in the lower chamber in the lower level did have some rather interesting statues that were standing in a shelf around that would cut into the thing around the top, and they were all statues of Ra, R-A-H, Amun Ra.
Oh, Egyptian.
Yeah.
Interesting. Wow. You know, it's too bad. I was thinking, you know, being a scientist, too bad you didn't take a bone fragment back with you. You could do carbon-14 and actually, date the bone.
Well, I could have done that, but one thing, I didn't want to disturb the burials, And the other, by then, I was involved with another couple of fellows from over in Vincennes, Indiana, and I had come to realize that they were more crooks than John Dillinger was. I did take that ankle joint and part of a tibia over there because I found it interesting because it had an arrowhead sticking in it, in the bone. And I don't know whatever happened to it. The one gentleman, Jack Ward, was supposed to have gotten a carbon 14 dating on it, but he never did. Instead, he mounted it on a board and showed it in his museum, which was the Son of Tobacco Museum.
So it's still available, though, so it's possible carbon 14 dating could still be done on it.
If it was still available, I don't know what happened to it. When he died, that would have been in 1992. Everything got locked up, then a lawyer got involved, and you know what that means.
Now, you said, you know, you saw Egyptian themes, and did you see Greek and Roman, maybe Phoenician, any other type of portraits that resembled these types of cultures?
Well, to tell you the truth, John, I wouldn't have known the difference, you know? I mean, I hadn't studied any of this stuff like I have now, so I wouldn't have known the difference.
Yeah, it's just my, again, when I would look through these artifacts, it just seemed like some portraits definitely looked Egyptian, you know, Egyptian type of garments and facial features. Some actually even looked Hebrew. And in my opinion, some looked Greek, Roman. It seems like there was a mix of many cultures, which would indicate that you know, cave, whether you know, however people from Asia and Europe brought the artifacts over, acted as some kind of repository for these different artifacts, maybe a museum, who knows.
Well, Cyclone Covey believes that this was an ancient college or university. And these people who resided there and are buried there, whom we now believe were the Sun Kings, that they were highly intelligent, and other Native American tribes, as they learned of this, they sent their people there to learn. Now, that's what Cyclone Covey believes.
That's interesting. So now we're guessing, you know, thousands of artifacts were removed. I guess, do you think there may be thousands more still in the cave?
I know there are.
Now, do you remember where the cave was? Could you go back and find it if you wanted to?
Do you know that I went back there, was it last year? Or I told you when I went. Was it last year or year before?
I can't remember. I think it was last year, but I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I couldn't find it.
Is it because of the overgrowth and was it just the area changed? Was it construction or just it was just been so long since you've been there? You just kind of lost bearing of the markers.
Well, yeah. I mean, I hadn't been there since July of 1987. And everything has changed. The topography has changed, the growth. See, what we did when we sealed that cave, and the landowner, who was a very good old guy, and had the equipment to do it, we moved some earth and put it over the entrance and then shaped it to fit into the landscape. And we went through the woods and took up small trees and such and planted on it, you know. And what was a foot-high sapling in 1987 is now a 20-foot-high tree. So, I mean, everything has changed totally. When I was in there last year, I think I was in the right valley. I was so turned around, I didn't know whether I was going to be able to get out of there or not.
That's kind of a shame, because it's, you know, it could be that this is lost to the world. Or who knows, maybe some caver 100 years from now will rediscover it.
Yeah, well, he can have it.
I know you've experienced a lot of grief and anxiety and just people bothering you for decades over this. So maybe this is a blessing in disguise.
Well, I think it is. And I'll tell you one thing I believe, and that is that long as that cave bears my name, there's a stigma attached to it. Because some people, not scholars, mind you, but others who want to be scholars, have really put a black mark by my name.
You know, unfortunately, doesn't it seem that's the way it works in our society? The scientist who makes an incredible new discovery, you break the bounds of the current academic understanding, and you know, what can I say? You're looked as a maverick, somebody who is just not conventional, and that's probably what's happened to you. You've discovered something. You brought something to the world that can't be explained with the normal academic understanding.
Yeah, and most of these people, one in particular, who's still rooting around down there trying to find it. The guy's name's Harry Hubbard. He's a high school dropout. I mean, what's he going to do with it except loot it?
By the way, before I forget, have you shown these artifacts to any other archaeologists or historians at major universities? Because, you know, there are thousands of them, and they're all over the place. And, you know, it seems like that would be the next stage, is to bring them to, you know, these university professors, ones that have open minds, let's say, and would be objective, and really do some tests, scanning electron microscope. Do you know if any of this has been done over the years?
That was done by a physicist over at Brigham Young University. He dated them at maybe 2,000 years before Christ. But then I learned, because this organization, I was posting a bit on their homepage, and the guy who was running it decided he would put together a symposium at Brigham Young, and that I was invited. As a matter of fact, I was supposed to be the keynote speaker, which I was. The only trouble is when I got over there, about 10 minutes after I met these people, I realized there's something wrong here. And it turns out that they were a bunch of treasure hunters. Now, we had quite a symposium, but it was not a legitimate thing.
That's too bad, because that would be a great thing to do. You know what really, again, as a scientist, troubles me about this? It's not like a UFO sighting. You don't have anything concrete. You have eyewitness reports and maybe even blips on the radar, which is still significant. But here, it's not just your word saying, you know, I discovered this cave. We have thousands and thousands of physical objects from it that can be tested. And this wasn't discovered yesterday. This was 1982. So maybe it just shows how stubborn academic research is and how long it takes for new discoveries to come to the main front. But, you know, the funny thing is, too, I mean, we have to be objective. I mean, I'm sure if you found out if they were tested and turned out to be a forgery, you'll say, fine, it was tested. Or if they turned out to be old, you'd be open to that. But let's have the studies done. So, you know, we're coming up to a half-hour break. I know one test that was done, and I know you do, by Scott Walter. And maybe we can discuss that after the break and like to get your take on that, if that's okay.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
And This has just been so fascinating, Russ. I tell you, I can't tell you how appreciative I am that you're here discussing this with us. So I'd like everyone, please stand by. We're going to take a few minutes break. You are listening to Exploring Mysteries, Histories, and the Paranormal with Dr. John on History.fm and LiveParanormal.com radio. And we'll be back in a few short minutes with our special guest, Russell Burroughs. Well, we're back. I guess we lost the commercial. Are you still there, Russ?
Oh, yeah, still here.
Again, I know you're aware of this research because it was published in Ancient American Magazine. And, just to summarize it, Scott Walter, a well-known geologist, and actually a good friend of mine and yours, we know who he is. His expertise is cement. He actually tested the cement at the Pentagon after the 9/11 attack. And in fact, Russ will be on the show next month talking about the Kensington Runestone. He had a piece of marble, a marble slab that was removed allegedly from Burroughs Cave, and it has a figure of Isis kneeling beneath the sun. And what he did was he supposedly studied and tested it. And he believed it was, I guess you could say, a forgery made from a marble tombstone a couple hundred, not a couple hundred years old, maybe about from the 1980s. And this fragment from a marble tombstone was then engraved with this figure. So he doesn't say anything about the black pieces, but basically the cursive, there's letters on it that he says is cursive English carved letters, and it's consistent with an old marble tombstone that's kind of been recycled and estimates it was created in the 1980s. So I was wondering, I know we only tested one piece. There were only about, if I'm not mistaken, 30 marble pieces, so there wasn't a lot of them. And I was wondering if you could give me your take on this, Russ?
Well, I don't know what to think about that. I think Scott, who is also a friend of mine, I think he may very well have overstepped himself on this, because we've had two people come forward. One is an archaeologist in England whom I met in Vienna, Austria in 2001, I think it was. And she had a letter published, I think, in the Ancient American, and she really takes Scott to task over this. She says that it's not cursive. It is a form of ancient writing. Well, I don't know. Don't ask me. I mean, because to begin with, I don't remember ever seeing that piece before.
Oh, interesting. So,
yeah.
So basically, Scott is looking. I think isn't only about four letters, if I'm not mistaken. There's not a lot of script. Is that correct, Russ?
That's correct.
And some of it is hard to read. So I guess you could see different types of script. So maybe the best solution would be to have other language experts kind of look at it and weigh in on it.
Well, I think when you and I talked this afternoon, you brought up a very interesting point in his summary, and where he said, and now that we know, perhaps it's time for Russell Burroughs to reveal where this cave is. You know, possibly that's what the whole thing was about.
The other thing Scott says, which is very clear, is that he's not saying all the pieces are fakes, because he really is not sure. In fact, I wrote and asked him today about the black pieces, and I said, did you, study the black stones? And he said, he looked at hundreds of them under the microscope, and it seems like some were very highly weathered, and some were not weathered at all, and all levels in between. So it seems like there's a variety of mix of pieces, highly weathered to very little weathering, and he is not sure on these. So at least he's honest. He's not forming a judgment that because he feels this one piece may be a fake that the others are. But I guess what you're saying is we really don't know for sure if this other piece is a fake. I guess that English archaeologist said one of her concerns was that the lettering was very small, and you normally don't see that type of small lettering on a tombstone. Is that correct?
That's what she said, yeah. I didn't buy the tombstone thing to begin with, but like I say, I just don't remember that piece. How can I possibly remember all 79,000 of them,
Well, I always ask that question when an archaeological find is in a sense violated and opened up and it's not documented. You can't say for sure what pieces came from there and what may have been introduced. I was explaining to you that, I have a collection of artifacts, and sometimes I mix collections because of themes, but yet they're from different archaeological finds. So if somebody pulled those out, they may assume they're all from the same find. So, yeah, I think what Scott did a good piece of work, and it opens up actually more questions. And I guess it goes with my statement before. I think more tests need to be done, and more experts need to look at these. Would you agree, Russ?
I would agree. Yeah. That archaeologist in England, she lives in Durham, England. Her name is Elizabeth Moberly. I'm looking at her letter right now that she wrote. Let's see. Yeah.
Russ?
Yeah.
Because I'm interested, as in the paranormal and the psychic world, and I work with two really top psychometrists in the world. In fact, I had them both on my show before. One is Becky Andreasen. She was on actually my first show. She's just an amazing psychometrist. Where, she can hold an ancient object and tell you about it. In fact, she'll tell me about an object. I'll do the historical research, and she'll be like 90% correct. Well, I asked her about the Burroughs Cave artifacts. And this actually is very interesting, and it could actually answer some of our questions, but she believed the artifacts are authentic, but they're from different periods, not from like one period or culture. And she said some are really, really old, and some are more recent, like what Scott saw in the weathering process. And I said to her, well, how old could the really old ones be? And she believed they could be thousands of years old, and the more recent ones could be as recent as 500 years old. And she did believe there were pre-Columbus. But listen to this, Russ. She believed they came here not through voyages through the ocean, but through the Bering Strait. As we know, the Asian people migrated from Siberia to Alaska through the Bering Strait, and our Native Americans are descended from the Eastern Siberians, that these were the people that brought the artifacts, and there were like several tribes that collected them. So I thought that was very interesting. What do you think of that description?
Well, I've heard that before. I don't know. It could be true. But don't forget, this is not too far from the ancient interstate highways. That's the rivers. It's not too far from the junction of the Ohio and the Mississippi River. There was a navigator who's dead now, But he did an estimate or a study, not a study, and he believed that from the Straits of Gibraltar to the mouth of the Mississippi would only take about 21 days. Now, the question is, you know, has been raised, well, if they came by ship, how did they couldn't carry enough food for all of them? Well, Thor Heyerdahl and his little ship Kon-Tiki answered that question, because when they were sailing it, every morning when they got up, the deck was covered with flying fish. And their water would simply have been like in the Byrene, the one, the big ship that the Phoenicians had, would have had water cask built into the bottom of the ship, and the weight of that water would have acted as ballast. So there's a lot of answers to that question. None of them can be proven. The Bering Strait is one theory, but they would have had to travel a long way to get down to southern Illinois.
I'm thinking too of the stone coffins and all the artifacts. The weight would be maybe just a little too much. But I thought it was an interesting psychometry experiment, because of the idea that she saw them as diverse in age, like Scott believed through the weathering. You know, that's the thing I came away with after looking at hundreds and hundreds of these artifacts and holding them. One is that, I have to say I'm no expert. There's no way these could have been forged. The scripts are so different, the symbols. You'd have to have a knowledge of all the different ancient cultures and rituals, the diversity representing many cultures, and a couple pieces I have, some are really weathered and some looked fairly clean, maybe, you know, only hundreds of years old or 500 years old. And so I guess we both agree, you know, more studies need to be done, maybe because of this radio show. Academic researchers and professors who are interested would contact us. I know I have access to certain materials testing tools, but I'd like to see this done in the hand of certified archaeologists and material testing professors who really know what they're doing.
Yeah, that's been the problem all along, is the people who have done some of this stuff. Like I said, one is a high school dropout, and he's the one who claims that that cave is the burial place of Alexander the Great. Now, wait a minute. Alexander the Great?
You know? Wow. Well, you know, Frank Joseph was on my program last week talking about the Ark of the Covenant. And, you know, no one really knows where the Ark of the Covenant is. And one hypothesis was, he said, could it be in Burroughs Cave? Because now, I wasn't aware of this, but there was supposedly some remote sensing done over Burroughs Cave, and they discovered some cavities that looked like it would contain an object the size of the Ark of the Covenant. What's the story with this remote sensing? Do you know anything about that?
Oh, yeah. That was supposedly ground-penetrating radar. And that was done by a man by the name of, what was his name? I'll think of it in a minute. Well, it turns out those were all phony. They were, what he and Wayne May were attempting to do was to get more people to invest in their scheme to find Burroughs Cave. And listen, where they're digging, they're 60 miles away as a crow flies from where the cave is.
Oh, so the remote sensing wasn't done anywhere near the cave.
Oh, no. So, and it wouldn't do that anyway.
Well, I was going to say, again, I'm no expert in ground penetrating radar, but it's not always exact. It shows approximate areas and, you know, approximate size of chambers. So it would be a kind of maybe a stretch to say if we see an object exactly the size of the Ark of the Covenant. You'd have to have a little more refined measurements to conclude that.
Ground penetrating radar will only show you disturbed earth. Like if you're hunting for an old grave or something like that, ground penetrating radar will locate it by showing you where the earth was dug. It doesn't fit the rest of the strata around it. And it will show up there. But as far as locating a cave, no. Can it show you an object in a cave, like a box? No. Can't do it.
Well, especially now where, you know, you don't even remember where the original cave is, we couldn't even consider doing those kind of tests. But, you know, I wanted to bring something up, too, about the psychic studies. Again, I've been a scientist all my life, but obviously I have a passion for the paranormal, and I'm open to it. And I do believe in the paranormal and psychic world. I mean, if I didn't, I wouldn't be having this radio show. But one interesting correlation, which Becky and actually you independently confirmed with me, to give an example, was one of the pieces that I have, and it is posted on the radio website. By the way, you know, for the listeners, you can listen to all our past programs for free, download them to your MP3, download them as MP3s, and see our upcoming guests at drjohnradio.com. That's D-R-J-O-H-N radio.com. And I posted six artifacts from Burroughs Cave, which I own, and one of them is a small medallion. It's a small kind of oval shape with a hole in it, and it looks like a kind of a strange pyramid shape on it. And when I first got that, I decided to meditate with it, and I would swear that thing popped out like a hologram, and I was getting like an altered state of consciousness, like it was opening up a realm. And I asked Becky about it, and she looked at it, and she said the same thing. She said, I didn't tell her my experience, but she said it opens a channel, or like opens your consciousness to other dimensions. And she said it has to be used at certain times with the moon and the seasons, and you have to know how to use it, because the ancient culture did. And then I asked you about it, and you almost said the same words as Becky. So I thought, now that's an interesting correlation, how three people independently kind of identify a certain piece out of thousands of having these kind of psychic abilities.
And there's no limit to the power of the human mind. You know, I mean, some people can do that, some can't. You know, and those that can't, they have the power to do it. They just never developed it.
You know, Russ, let me ask you, what would you like to see done now? I guess, you know, would you like people to try to find the cave? Would you like to just to see more testing with the artifacts? If so, what kind? I mean, you know, you have a legacy as the discoverer of this cave. You brought these artifacts to the world. What would you like to see as the next step in the study and exploration of Burroughs Cave?
Well, I believe that there are enough objects out of that cave to give an answer, to answer the question. Now, did I make them? Well, yeah, I'd have to have been awful busy for 24 hours a day for many years to have done. And I would have to be a whole hell of a lot smarter than I am. You know, so I think a study needs to be done on what is out, and especially pay attention to the cuts and grooves on the black stones, because in some of those there is I've forgotten what kind of a crystal it is that's growing in some of those cuts and grooves, and it takes those crystals about 2,000 years to grow. Jim Shears first found one of those, and I cannot for the life of me remember which crystal it is. But Jim Shears found it first. He was looking at it with a microscope. And he found that and called me right away. And then I started looking for them, and I found a couple as well.
You know, that I remember asking Jim at lunch about that, because I read about that but didn't have any information. And Jim knew who actually had it, and I think he gave it to someone, and it just kind of disappeared, because I was asking him if we could track that down. Boy, would that add credibility to the Burroughs Cave pieces.
Yeah. I believe John White has that piece.
Oh, that's right, because he has another big collector. Well, the big collectors that I know is Scott Walter. And again, Scott will be on the show next month. He's an incredible scientist. He has tested many of my artifacts, and actually is one of my closest friends. And I just enjoy Scott's company so much. And it'd be interesting to hear his take on some of his research. John White. My final thought was, Russ, it would really be nice to put all these together in one area. I mean, I would donate mine if it was like one museum that could house them all and make them available for scientists. But, you know, Russ, I noticed we're just about running out of time here. And is there any last-minute statements you'd like to make that's pretty quick before we end the program?
Yeah. Scott, if you're listening, just remember, buddy, you're a geologist, not an archaeologist.
Well, we listen... Russ, I can't tell you what a pleasure it was for you to be on my program. I've known you for years, and I appreciate you sharing your research and information with me. And listen, you got to come back. We didn't even get to the ghost hunting, so I hope you'll come back for another hour, and we'll talk about ghost hunting this time, and I won't bother you with Burroughs Cave. How's that?
That'd be fine.
Great. Well, listen, I want to thank everyone for listening tonight. You've been listening to Exploring Mysteries, Histories, and the Paranormal with Dr. John on History.fm and LiveParanormal.com. And please join us again next week for another special show. And until next week, good night, and may God be with you.
Good night, John.
Good night, Russ. Thanks a million, my friend.
You're welcome, buddy.